in one or two favoured places. Behind that weather front, across Scotland, Northern Ireland and eventually the more northern parts of England and Wales, it will brighten up. The gusty wind will subside. We'll see some sunshine, but it won't be as warm here. Temperatures are typically in the range 11 to 15 degrees across these more northern areas. So that's Wednesday's weather. Looking further ahead, there's a lot of uncertainty in the detail, but it does look as if the more northwestern parts of the UK, that is Scotland and Northern Ireland, are likely to see most of the outbreaks of rain on offer through Thursday and Friday. For England and Wales, though, it should be largely dry with some sunshine, and again, with fairly light winds, it should feel fairly pleasant. That's it, Neil. Back to you.
All right. Thank you, John Hammond. Time now for our book of the week. In 1997, Margaret Thatcher invited Charles Moore to write her biography on the understanding that it would not be published until after her death. Today, 23-year-old Margaret Roberts is living and working in Essex, but life is set to change following her selection as candidate for Dartford. Nicholas Farrell reads from Margaret Thatcher, the authorised biography.
Dartford was not what Tories call their natural territory. It was a heavily industrial seat with cement works, engineering companies, defence firms, and a strong trade union presence. Political meetings were liable to heckling and disruption. This was a Labour place in what, after the electoral victory of 1945, were the most Labour years of the century. In Dartford, the Labour majority of 20,000 was unassailable. The young Margaret Roberts, however, set out cheerfully to assail it. She was closer to the party grassroots than to the patrician leadership of the party, which after 1945 was in a rather defeatist frame of mind. In particular, she was close to small business and to the aspirations of young lower-middle-class people, like herself, born with no great advantages, and her arrival as candidate recruited them in ever greater numbers. Although they regarded her as upper-class educationally, which they respected, they also considered Margaret their own. "She was one of us, in a way. She got us all going again," said one. Another said Margaret was plump, smart, pretty, loved hats, lovely skin. They also noticed and admired the fight she had in her. As she started to campaign in the constituency, she called for a recovery of personal responsibility. In wartime, there was a slogan, "It all depends on me." People seem to have forgotten that, and they think it depends on the other person. And she offered women what would nowadays be called empowerment, the idea that they knew better than their masters. "Don't be scared of the high language of economists and cabinet ministers, but think of politics at our own household level." Back in Colchester, Willie Cullen, a Scottish farmer with a farm near Harwich, took Margaret to the Caledonian Ball at the town hall. Margaret reported to her sister, Muriel. "I was something of a curiosity, as he usually takes his sister. I think I set some tongues wagging. He, by the way, is 34. He's awfully sweet. I'm getting quite fond of him." But Margaret also saw herself as matchmaker. Having heard that Muriel had broken with her fading suitor, she wrote, "You had better come down here some other weekend to meet the current boyfriend. By the way, he will never become your brother-in-law, though I have high hopes he may be mine one day." On the 8th of April, only a few weeks after the relationship had begun, Margaret had Muriel to stay in Colchester and introduced her to Willie Cullen. The flirtation, however, continued. Perhaps a merry diversion for Margaret, perhaps more serious for Willie. Willie kept a diary for the year 1949, mainly a terse, bald record of agricultural doings. "Carting dung to bottom of lane. Attended Mistley Court with Fred Retractor. Met Margaret at 5:30. We went to Flatford. A splendid evening." In the following day's entry, Margaret inserted the time of their next meeting in her own hand. She also inscribed her Colchester address in the front of the diary with two kisses, and occasionally interpolated her own account of an event in Willie's pages.
We went to the Caledonian Ball and had a lovely time. Wore black velvet frock, pearls, and long drop earrings.
When Willie won a huge sum on two horses at Newmarket, Margaret wrote, in capitals, of her first sight of the woman whose eighth Prime Minister she would eventually become.
Saw Princess Elizabeth, and she saw me.
Willie took her to lunch in Colchester that weekend, before an afternoon together in the cinema watching Bob Hope in Paleface. The whole farming fraternity was present in the restaurant.
All heads were turned towards us. One of them tore up some silver cigarette paper into small pieces and threw it all over William as he walked past our table.
Willie persevered, and she wrote to Muriel,
William has given me a very nice black calf handbag. I'll have to hang on to William for a while longer now.
In the very same letter, she mentions another date. She was going to the North Kent Rotary Ball, she said,
with a chap called Dennis Thatcher, who is managing director of the Atlas Paintworks.
Meanwhile, Willie Cullen introduced Margaret to his family. In May, she was received for dinner at his farm.
The wives were typical wives. They know of domestic matters and nothing else. I stayed with the men after supper.
Here is not only Margaret's lifelong preference for male company, but a sort of presentiment of what marriage to Willie Cullen would involve. She knew that, both by temperament and by intellect, she could not be happy as a farmer's wife. Muriel came down again to see Willie, and soon Willie liked Muriel more and more, as was intended. In the course of the autumn and winter of 1949, the relationship between Margaret and Willie Cullen continued to cool, and that between him and Muriel warmed. What exactly happened in the next 2 months is partially obscure, and the two Roberts sisters did not want to shed much light on it. But one way or another, Willie Cullen did change partners. The process of being gently dumped by Margaret and pushed towards Muriel instead must have been a complicated one. It seemed to involve a good deal of negotiation, but with no apparent falling out between the sisters. Margaret kept Muriel fully informed of the course of the breakup.
I have written to William in the vein I told you. We are meeting in London to talk over the various aspects of we three, and it will then be broken off between he and I for good and all. Hope you approve.
Once we three were rearranged, Margaret was keen to get everything settled. On the 14th of February, only a week before polling day, Margaret wrote a formal letter to Muriel, typed by a secretary, which said, without comment,
I saw your engagement in the Telegraph this morning.
In her own hand, however, and presumably written so that no assistant would see it, Margaret added a P.S.
So glad the announcement is in today's Telegraph. One feels it gives the stamp of finality to the whole affair.
As soon as the election was out of the way, Margaret, who was to be the only bridesmaid at the wedding in April, threw herself into its every detail. All Margaret's interventions were well meant, but her sister would not have been human if she did not sometimes feel irritated to be told what to do. Muriel's marriage to Willie Cullen proved long and successful, but the way it was plotted was probably slightly galling. Although Margaret never really had any intention of marrying Willie Cullen, what probably precipitated the break was the doctor, Robert Henderson, the medical superintendent at Southern Hospital in Dartford. Already 47 when Margaret first met him, and therefore just over twice her age, he had enjoyed a distinguished medical career. In Margaret's letters to Muriel, he is the only boyfriend who is invariably referred to with respect, sometimes even with tenderness.
In the evening, I met Robert. We went for a drink. He said he thought I looked flat and miserable, and I ought to go out for a little while. Wasn't it sweet of him?
One Sunday afternoon, he drove her round the Weald of Kent, and then gave her dinner at the hospital.
I think we are both getting very fond of one another. In fact, more than that, I hope so.
The entertainments became more glamorous and more intimate. She wrote,
On Saturday, I'm going down to Eastbourne for the weekend. Robert is coming to join me on the Sunday, staying overnight. Needless to say, I'm looking forward to it tremendously.
This was perhaps as near as Margaret ever came to enjoying a naughty weekend. The campaign went extremely well. Margaret knocked 6,000 off Norman Dodd's majority, doing much better than the average Tory candidate, without, of course, coming near to beating him. Nationally, Labour clung on to power by an overall majority of 6, which made a second election soon highly probable. The relationship with Robert Henderson continued, although it began to show some signs of difficulty.
Whether it will come to anything, I very much doubt, for he thinks the difference between our ages very great.
She went to the Royal Tournament with Dennis Thatcher, who was still, despite Robert, somewhere in the background, inviting her out for the odd treat and dinner. The last surviving references to Robert Henderson in Margaret's correspondence date from May 1951. After that, nothing more is heard of him until a letter in September which her father, Alfred Roberts, sent to Muriel. This letter announces that her mother, Beatrice, is going into hospital. He continues, "Next, which will be more surprising, Margaret and Dennis Thatcher are becoming engaged. He has been taking Margaret about the place to various functions for almost 2 years, but his proposal was unexpected. The Robert business upset Margaret very much, but that will pass. Dennis has had an unfortunate experience. He was married during the war, but after only 5 weekends' leave spent with his wife, she left him." What had happened? If one compares her references to the two men in her letters, it is clear that Margaret felt more tender towards Robert than towards Dennis. Indeed, almost all her mentions of Dennis are either neutral or mildly unflattering. She told Muriel, for example,
"I can't say I really ever enjoy going out for the evening with him. He has not got a very prepossessing personality."
With Robert, she took trouble.
There is no evidence that Dennis fell suddenly in love with Margaret Roberts. Rather, his admiration for the pretty, intelligent, and spirited girl slowly grew. "Let's have a go," he said to himself, and he did, proposing to her after dinner in his flat. She did not say yes or no at once. As Dennis put it nearly 50 years later, she didn't leap at it.
Dennis's proposal was a surprise. She admired Dennis as the ex-soldier and was pleased to have someone who shared her political interests and views and, to be blunt, someone who had a good job and could afford a good flat in Chelsea. He was a passport to the home county's respectability that she sought. She liked and lent on his knowledge of business and money. She recognised him as her social superior with a certain style and dash, including his penchant for fast cars. The couple drove up to Grantham to see the Robertses. The meeting was amicable. Dennis found Margaret's parents to be sweet people, with old man Roberts very quiet-spoken and well-read, but a bit straight-laced, and Mrs. Roberts very quiet, very typical of a wife. The conversation was, Dennis remembered, a bit sticky. Eventually, Margaret says, "Father, Dennis does like a drink." Very long faces. Long hunt through the house. Finally, blow dust off bottle of sherry.
Arrangements for the wedding were made. In the campaign of 1951, Margaret fought with all her vigour. This time, she cut Dodd's majority by a further 1,300. Under Churchill, the Conservatives returned to power for the first time since the war, with an overall majority of 17. But Margaret Roberts went off to get married.
Nicholas Farrell continues reading from Margaret Thatcher, the authorised biography by Charles Moore, at the same time tomorrow. The abridger was Richard Hamilton, the producer, Elizabeth Allard. The shipping forecast is coming up shortly. And now on BBC Radio 4, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Wednesday, the 1st of May. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Atsara, South Atsara, Forties, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and Southeast Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. Low Fair Isle 1002 expected just north of Norwegian Basin 995 by 1800 Wednesday. Low Biscay 1012 expected northeast Spain 1015 by same time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, North Atsara. Southerly veering westerly 5 to 7, increasing gale 8 or severe gale 9. Occasional rain, good, occasionally poor. South Atsara, north 40s. Southerly or